Ghosts and history go hand in hand. Like ghosts, the participants in history may be forgotten over time, but remnants of their existence will continue to seep into the present and haunt those still living. We open Season 6 by speaking with Anne Jeffellers-Mason, whose career spans managing multiple historic sites throughout the very old town of Jonesboro, Tennessee. Anne's experiences and those of her family intertwine the history, ghosts, and elemental spirits of the ancient land in the Appalachians where she lives. Get ready to visit the mountains today on Homespun Haints. Hello, Hainted Loves. Welcome to Homespun Haints Season 6. I'm Becky.
I'm Diana.
And we're back. Did you think we were coming back? Of course. We always come back.
We did promise to haunt you again.
And here we are. We started not in February. We're starting in March because I had to travel the world a little bit.
And see the Northern Lights.
I did. We went to Northern Norway because we're weirdos and we decided that we needed to go to the Arctic Circle in February.
But that's when it's the prettiest.
It was amazing. It was magical. My little soul, I guess I have a big soul, but whatever, it was filled to the brim with so many magical experiences. I saw the Northern Lights. I saw more snow than I care to ever see again. I saw mountains. I saw reindeer. I ate reindeer. I bought reindeer pelts to bring back with me. I bought a purse made out of a reindeer because mine broke.
What part of the reindeer is your purse made out of? Just curious. No reason.
Not the scrotum.
Oh, dang it. Another family heirloom opportunity lost.
Yes, I'm sorry. No, it's not the scrotum. There's a troll museum up there in the Arctic Circle.
That's so cool.
In Northern Norway. It was a lot less realistic than I thought it was going to be. It was all about folklore. What? I mean, here in the States, we have a Bigfoot museum not too far from where I live now in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
And we've got recordings of Bigfoot sightings. We've got Bigfoot poop on display. We've got Bigfoot footprints and Bigfoot pelts. I thought it was going to be like this. I thought the troll museum was going to be like, oh, here's a troll cloth and here's a troll footprint. No, it was like, here are the legends of the trolls. And then it was giant, huge constructions out of plaster of what trolls may or may not look like. And I was like, well, where's the real troll stuff?
No.
Got some funny looks. And they're like, well, ma'am, trolls aren't real. Like, but.
They all moved to Iceland.
I guess
so. Long time ago.
They got on their little troll ferry and bought a one-way ticket.
Yeah. Traveled only at night across the ocean.
I guess so. Yeah, there was no real troll stuff. It was all fairy tales and folklore, but that's okay. I did learn a lot, and we will be sharing some troll lore with our patrons on our Patreon, patreon.com/homespunhaints. But Diana, I wanted to let you know, I tried so hard to get haunted on this trip.
I know. You even went to towns, little tiny towns in Germany where they didn't speak English or take credit cards.
Yes, I did.
Or have top sheets.
They didn't have top sheets anywhere we went. You can probably imagine it's a lot of work to get to Northern Norway from Atlanta. It took like, we were on a total of 6 flights.
Whoa.
There and back again.
There and back. Oh, thank God.
Yeah. So 3 flights each way and the kids are done. They don't want to go anywhere anytime soon.
I bet.
They're just done. But because we had a layover in Frankfurt on our last leg back, I thought, hey, why spend it at the airport in Frankfurt? Let's extend this by a day. You know the way I do things. I get on Google Maps and I put my finger down somewhere.
I thought you were going to say you get on Google Maps and just type in haunted blank and see what comes up in the area.
I found this town. I shouldn't say I found it because I'm sure a lot of people around there know about it.
Eureka.
It's a town called Gelnhausen. It's about 40 kilometers from the Frankfurt airport. So it's about a 35-40 minute drive. 20 minutes if your driver really takes advantage of the fact that there's no speed limits on the Autobahn like ours did. That was fun. We decided to explore the town, which was this adorable, the Altstadt, the old city, cobblestone streets, the daub and timber, medieval houses along the walls, everything's crooked. It's all different colors. It was beautiful. And we went to this place, the Evangelische Marienkirche.
Is that a person?
Mary, Marian, and Kirche is the word for church. So it was basically a St. Mary's church. And it was beautiful. They had these 1,000-year-old tapestries. You had to kind of like go in the back. Of course, the kids are freaking out. The kids freak out anyway whenever they go into a church. It could be because they've never really been in one before.
Their feet start smoking a little bit.
Yeah, they wouldn't even go into Christ Church in Ireland with me.
Oh, wow.
They're like, are we supposed to be in here? Anyway, so we go in. We see the 1,000-year-old tapestries. The kids are complaining about the smell because it's an old church. And I saw these reliefs on the walls of these, you know, old medieval reliefs. The church was built in 1102, so it's ancient. Oh, wow. There are these gorgeous reliefs, carvings on the walls of medieval people in full-on medieval dress with the biggest cod pieces I have ever seen in sculpture.
And you know it because it's a relief.
Yeah. Oh, man. Let me show you. Let me text this to you. I'll send you a video, too.
Oh, my.
Right? That was worth the trip to Germany for. Look at that.
That guy's got some junk in the trunk.
Dude, like.
Except it's a frunk.
And that wasn't the only one. There was another one, too. This guy's not as protuberant, but I'll send this one to you.
I like your video that zooms in on it, just in case. Just in case you missed that.
Those will be included on our website, the videos of the zooming in of the cod piece. So there we are. And we thought we were the only ones in the church.
Uh-oh. So you were talking loudly about cod pieces while there was a service going on?
No, 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 no. Thank God there was no service going on. Oh, okay. But we were wandering around the church. We went into the little ante section, the back section, saw the tapestries, came out. I filmed cod pieces, pointed them out to the kids. The kids were horrified. Mom, how could you? What is that? And I was like, well, it's a cod piece. And I was like, yo, the men like to dress up their frontal endowments back in the day. They're giving a horrible, horrible stares at me. And mom, let's go. I'm scared. I'm scared of the cod pieces. And
that sounds like me.
We turn around and we start heading back down the long aisle from the altar towards the entrance to the church. Out of nowhere appeared a woman sitting in the very back of the church. And the kids were like, where did she come from? We didn't hear anything. And we start walking toward her. And the kids are like, what's going on? Who is that person? I said, she's probably just a worshiper. Just pay her no mind. Just keep walking. They're walking and walking. And she was literally sitting at the very, very last row, right in the aisle. And we came up to her. And it was really odd how she appeared out of nowhere. And I'm, of course, embarrassed because I've been talking loudly about cod pieces. And we get to her and she opens her mouth to talk to us. Turns out she doesn't speak any English. Thank God.
Oh, good. Unfortunately, cod piece is the same in German.
Oh, no!
What's a twist?
Actually, I got to look this up. Okay. What is cod piece in German? Because this is not something I learned in school. Okay, codpiece. Yes, you're right! It's also codpiece.
She said, what she was saying to you, you didn't hear it, but she said, I heard nothing that you said other than codpiece. Well, to let you know, this is why I come to this church.
No, turns out she worked there, or so she said. Mm-hmm. She said she worked there. She said she wasn't a ghost. Well, she didn't actually say that. I didn't ask her if she was a ghost because...
A lot of ghosts stay at their place of work.
Yeah, and don't really speak English. But she kept telling us to slow down, that we could stay as long as we wanted.
Oh.
And then I was like, no, we're done. And she's like, okay, well, you have to go this way to get out. So we had to go light some candles and make a donation. And then she was like, no, you can't go that way. It's closed now. So we had to go out a different way. It was interesting. So we were essentially locked in.
Ghosts convincing you to get locked into the church at night.
Mm, it was night, too. Yeah, it was just before closing.
When the cod pieces come alive. It's like Night at the Museum, cod piece edition.
Yeah, so as usual, went to Europe, saw a lot of old churches. Kids got annoyed with me. Did not see any ghosts at
all.
What
the heck?
I know.
What?
Stayed in a 15th century inn in a small town in Germany. No ghosts. I did have repeated nightmares of falling down the stairs, which was weird. But otherwise...
Is that because there were a lot of stairs at your inn or because...
Yeah, the whole thing was like all wonky winky, like levels up here and down there and things in weird places. Like, I mean, it was built on the side of a hill and it was very Escher-esque inside.
The hill was a little different than the hill was when they built it.
Probably, yeah. So did not get haunted, but did see cod pieces. So I consider the trip a success.
Were the cod pieces kind of rubbed where people touch them for good luck, like Jim Morrison's gravestone marker? Is that who it is that everybody touches the cod piece?
I don't think Jim Morrison had a cod piece.
I don't know who it is then.
I suspect that not a lot of people are rubbing the cod pieces. They were pretty high up. It's like the people who sculpted them knew. They're like, we got to put this out of arm's reach because otherwise everyone's going to be like... rubbing their face all over that junk.
This is a church, damn it.
Bless me with your holy semen.
Ah!
Yeah, my children, though, bless their hearts.
No wonder they're afraid of churches.
This season that we are beginning now has absolutely nothing to do with ancient cathedrals in Europe.
Well, it does. It does, kind of, because we're talking about those Germanic settlers.
Yes, and Irish and Scottish and African and Cherokee and everybody else who came to live in this little pocket of North America known as the Appalachians.
Did you hear that?
Yes.
We're giving you what you want.
So many of you asked for us to delve back into our roots, where the haints dwell in the holler, in the mountains, where the banjos play.
Banjos and banshees, that's this season.
I like that. So that's what we're doing this season. We are returning to the Appalachian Mountains. If you are not in the U.S., you've probably even heard of the Appalachians. They're quite famous throughout the world. In fact, when I was in Norway, the hotel I stayed at, shout out to Michelle if she's listening, the lady who worked at the front of the hotel, I was telling her about the podcast and how we were going to be focusing on Appalachian stories and how that's where I grew up. This amazing, beautiful woman who's from South Africa, working in a hotel in Oslo, turns to me and says, oh, Appalachia, are the stories true?
Oh.
And I was like, probably. What did you hear?
Yes, it's true, but what is it?
I was thrilled that the reputation of the Appalachians extends all over the world.
So far and wide.
You know how dark and deep and mysterious this place is, and we are bringing you stories from Appalachia. And we're going to start today by talking to the former executive director of the Heritage Alliance Center in Jonesboro. She is now the program director for the McKinney Center in Jonesboro, Tennessee. Jonesboro is the oldest European settled town in Tennessee. It's a place that I grew up next to. I spent many, many summers there. My parents liked to ship me off to whatever historical educational thing was going on. I spent a lot of time in the cemetery there. I spent a lot of time in the haunted museums that Anne is going to tell us about. This was a really, really fun interview for me to reminisce about my childhood, for Diana to learn about just how it's really as weird as I say.
Yeah. Everyone agrees the stories are true.
I hope you all enjoy it. because you're going to get a lot of this season. We've got a lot of great guests lined up for you. We are going to be talking to a lot of people who are mediums in the area, who are paranormal investigators in the Appalachians. We'll talk to people who practice the craft in a very Appalachian way. We're going to have so much good stuff. So I hope you're ready to hock your britches up, get off that tractor, and turn on the radio and listen to some good old Appalachian stories, because that's what we got for you here this season.
Who doesn't have a radio in their tractor?
The tractors are loud. You can't hear the radio over all that. Homespun Hates coming at you on the AM.
If only. I'd do an AM radio show if we could.
Hell yeah. Okay. Lifetime goals. Holy shit. Let's do an AM radio. Actually, that would be fun. How do we hook up with that? Let's get an AM radio.
How do we do
show.
That?
That would be great.
Hainted Loves, if any of you work for a radio station, let us know how we get our own AM show. We'd do whatever.
Well, hopefully, y'all put on your earphones, get off them tractors because they're loud, and listen to some good old fashioned Appalachian tales. Oh, I'm so excited. Be sure you check out our website, homespunhaints.com, which we designed ourselves because we're web designers. If you do need web design services, hit us up. We can help you out because not only do we tell spooky tales, but we weave a mean story around your business and make a fabulous website to help prop you up, make your tractor business boom, but not in the way happened when my uncle threw that block of sodium in the lake. We don't talk about that. And also, please be sure you check out our Patreon, patreon.com/homespunhaints.
I'm more excited than a medieval German churchgoer about to rub my face on a giant codpiece.
Woohoo!
Yeah. I'm ready for season 6. Y'all get ready for this commercial.
Today on the show, we are so thrilled to bring on Anne Mason. When we reached out to her, she was the executive director of Heritage Alliance in Jonesboro, and she is now the program manager of the McKinney Center. And if you are not familiar with Jonesboro, we have spoken about Jonesboro, Tennessee before on the show. It was the first European settled town in Tennessee, and it is very historic and very haunted. And I spent many of my summers growing up in this very old haunted town at a summer camp, which Anne is familiar with. And I did a lot of gravestone rubbings and wandering around haunted museums and things like that. This is a place that is very near and dear to my heart. And I'm so excited to talk to Anne today about some of her experiences and family experiences and stories from some of these areas that I spent my childhood in. Anne, thank you so much for being here today.
Welcome.
It's thrilling to talk to another Tennessean. It's been too long since I've been up in Jonesboro. I've been meaning to take Diana there because it really is just a fascinating town.
Oh, it is. Yeah, you need to come and visit for sure.
Tell us a little bit about the Heritage Alliance, because it's a collection of different organizations, correct?
Yeah, it was formed from various organizations, and we took care of multiple museums and historic sites and provide educational programs through the sites and museums for guests of all ages. So we've got lots of old artifacts and documents and buildings to take care of and share.
So you mentioned that your headquarters were actually in an old house, an old farmhouse.
Yes. So the offices for the Heritage Alliance are in the Duncan House. The original part of the house was built in the 1840s, and then it was added on to through time. And then my grandparents actually lived there in the 1970s when it was a duplex.
Whoa!
So, yeah.
All world. So that was probably before you were born.
That was pre-me. So I have no memories of the house when it was anything besides my office. But I always thought that was a cool connection. When I first started working there, I can remember, like, I've never felt unsafe there or anything. But any old building I go into, I always tell it hello and goodbye at the end of the beginning of the day. And in one of our paranormal investigations we've done, one of the guys said, the spirits really like that you tell them hello and goodbye. Like, you acknowledge them, like, every day that you're there. It's like, well, I just know places have a history, so I like to acknowledge that when I walk into it.
I absolutely love that. That's great advice. It sounds like there's a lot of paranormal investigations that happen.
Yeah, and it's very popular in Jonesboro. But yeah, we definitely had someone who used to walk down. The Duncan House has this huge, beautiful staircase right when you walk in. It's gorgeous. But we used to have someone, you could obviously hear a person walk down the stairs and they would go out the front door. And then one day that just stopped. And I was like, well, I guess they decided they were fine. They didn't need to come back. So
they got where they were going finally. Oh my goodness, that happened for like years?
No, it happened for a couple years. It wasn't like a lot, but every now and then it would just happen. And I distinctly remember I just got used to it. But like, we were having one meeting in the house, and it was a late night meeting. And I mean, the house is just naturally spooky at dark because it's an 1840s house. So like, half the rooms have no overhead lighting. So when it gets dark in that house, it gets dark. We're in the meeting. And yeah, the person walks down the stairs, and then like, the other people in the meeting looked at us and were like, did you hear that? Is there someone on the stairs? And we're just like, me and my boss were like, oh yeah, it happens. So they were like very disturbed. And we're like, oh yeah, it happened.
So it was an auditory thing. You didn't see anybody or smell anybody. It was just, you heard the footsteps going and then the door closing.
It was very, very auditory. I've had other staff members there have like other experiences. Any of the guys who work there say they hear voices and stuff all the time.
Oh, and just the guys. Just the guys.
But we were told by the same investigators that the primary ghost in the house does not like women.
Aww.
So that could potentially be why he doesn't talk to us.
Jerk.
That's a rather large cohort to eliminate from liking.
Well, apparently he had a bad marriage and he had to move home and I don't know. It was a whole thing.
You said the major thing that you experienced was the sound of the steps walking down the staircase and out the door for a couple of years. And then suddenly that went away.
That stopped.
What did you feel the first time you witnessed that by yourself?
It was odd. I've been warned that it might happen by my boss because she'd been there for a while. And it was odd, but I don't know. I wasn't like super bothered by it. I had a similar experience when I was in college. I was a theater major. And the theater was a 100-year-old repurposed church.
Oh.
And every now and then people would walk up and down the stairs to where like our tech booth was. And of course, no one was like, you couldn't see who it was. I'd heard that before. So just in a different place.
Where'd you go to college?
Mars Hill. It was college at the time, but now it's university in Mars Hill, North Carolina.
Uh-huh. I know it. It's near Asheville. It's going to be haunted
too. Exactly. It's just... Yeah.
So you mentioned that the building, the headquarters that your offices were in were very haunted. And then also the Chester Inn, which is also part of this group under the Heritage Alliance, correct?
Yeah, the Chester Inn, it's a state-owned historic site, so it's owned by the state of Tennessee. It's the oldest commercial building in town. The original part dates to 1797.
Whoa!
Yeah, and it was an inn from 1797 till about World War I. Then it becomes a boarding house. Then it's converted in like the 1950s into efficiency apartments for the elderly.
Oh, and that's not going to be haunted.
Right. Yeah. And fun fact, my grandparents had one of those apartments. Same grandparents who lived in the Duncan House.
How bizarre.
I was in their apartment when I was like one and two. My mom all the time was like, you don't remember? And I'm like, no, mom, I do not remember the apartment in the Chester Inn when I was two. I wish I did, but I don't.
Does your mom remember? Does she say that it's basically the same? It was just as haunted back then?
Supposedly it's super haunted. But then the state came in 1989 and bought it and completely remodeled it to the closest they could guess is how it looked in the late 1800s.
Cool. Okay. Now, is it a working inn now or is it just more of a historic site?
It was at first when they remodeled it. Offices for the International Storytelling Festival, which is still a big thing in Jonesboro. And then in 2011, they finally got the museum they wanted in the lower level. So the Heritage Alliance, we run the museum and we have like three restored rooms upstairs that people can tour as well.
Oh, yeah. Very, very cool. I bet it's beautiful.
It's gorgeous. I mean, I love the building.
So tell us about some of the ghosts there.
It took a while for me to have any experiences there. People would come in all the time. And the first thing usually out of their mouth is this place haunted? I hear it's super haunted. And sometimes like the stories of the people looking for the spooks are just as interesting as the actual haunts. Because
I had this guy come in there once and lay down on the floor, and he was like, I can feel the floorboards talking to me.
Nice.
And I've been like pulled into like impromptu seances and stuff.
I want your job.
And the storytelling staff who has offices there have had offices there since the 1990s have had very different stories from us at first, where they're like, oh yeah, we hear things all the time. And we've seen like men in the windows and stuff, like figures in the windows. So we used to joke like, well, clearly all the ghosts live on your side of the building. But then sometimes you'd walk in and like the picture on the wall downstairs in the museum would be crooked, and like all the drawers on the desk would be opened, like on the historic desk we have in there. So I did one day after I like put everything back together, I was like, hey, you might be here, but this is our stuff. Can you please not mess with it? And it didn't happen after that.
Oh, that's nice. At least respectful ghosts.
How often would you say that happened when you walked in and all the drawers are out and the pictures are crooked?
Not like super often. It happened a few times. And then I was like, okay, let's not do this. And so and I didn't hear that it happened after that. So not that I saw anyhow.
This is one thing I love about Jonesboro. And Diana grew up in the Midwest. And I've told her, like, growing up here, it's like people just talk about ghosts. Oh, yeah. It's just normal.
Yeah. Especially if you work in anything old. I mean, it's going to come up. You have all kinds of interesting conversations in a historic site in the South.
When I visited Becky in Atlanta and we went to see the Kennesaw House and started asking about all the ghosts, and nobody blinked an eye. They just pulled out photos of ghosts. Like, yeah. Yep, here you go.
Yeah.
Have these ghost pictures and stay as long as you want. Yeah. Man, we were doing some weird stuff in there too. So they were probably talking about us later.
Yeah.
We didn't talk to the floorboards, but
yeah, that guy, that was an interesting one.
Maybe we just weren't listening, right?
Have there been other experiences that you've had outside of these buildings?
Every now and then, I just hear like someone say my name. It happened there, and it's happened a few times, even like my house occasionally, but the house is relatively new. When I took over as director, like our old director would never have allowed any paranormal investigation, whatever, to take place. Never, never, never. And that was a no, hard no. So when I took over, I knew the guys who were the directors of Tipton Haynes, and they have a paranormal group, SRS Paranormal. So I was like, yeah, let's do this and see how it goes. It was just me and them on that investigation. You know, they have all the cool toys. You put on the headset and you listen to like the voices. And they warned me, like, they're going to say your name a lot because you're here a lot. And it was like, it was constant. And. And they told me in the middle of it, they said, you've got two ghosts attached to you.
What? Oh, no.
Yeah. They're like, you have two who are attached to you. But they won't tell us who they are. And they're getting kind of angry that we're asking, because they said, no, they're there for you. And it wasn't our place to ask. But they said they like your energy. And I was like, okay.
Okay.
You know, I don't know if it's a past relatives or what have you. I don't know where I picked them up. But I guess every now and then when I randomly hear my name, there's no one else around. I'm like, well, I guess it's one of them. I don't know.
You have so much family, like so many family connections to all these places that you've worked in. I guess it makes sense. So you do hear your name now in your current home. You said it's new.
It was like a couple of times since we've lived here. We've lived here about 4 or 5 years. So it doesn't happen that often. But like just sometimes out of the blue and it's just me and the cats, I'll hear my name like clear as a bell. And I'm like, huh, okay.
Is it a man's voice or a woman's voice? Or can you
tell? Really tell. It sounds more like a man's voice.
Interesting.
So. Oh. I don't know. But I remember distinctly a night that happened in the theater too. We were doing something late at night. And it was just me and this other person. And I heard my name, clear as a bell. And I looked over. I said, did you hear my name? They said, yeah. I was like, maybe we should go. And they're like, yeah, let's go.
Ow. So you're also spending a lot of time there, too. Yeah.
So you're like the topic of ghost gossip.
I guess. Yeah.
They're constantly just talking about you in the background.
Apparently.
There.
And I guess it's okay.
So I'm just still curious about the footsteps that you witnessed.
Yeah.
In your wildest speculation, can you pinpoint anything that could have possibly made it stop? Was it maybe an investigation or a piece of furniture moved? Or
I don't know. That was long before we did the investigations. I don't know. I just felt like maybe whoever it was decided they didn't need to come back. I don't know.
Okay. It wasn't some kind of exorcism or anything like that.
No. I will say that when we did do the investigation in the house, because I was reluctant for a long time, because I was like, I'm there alone a lot, so maybe I don't want to know. But I told him, I was like, you know, the most activity I've ever experienced here was on the stairs. So they put their little like sensors down on the stairs. They did not stop going off. We'd be in another part of the house and you could hear the stuff on the stairs just going crazy. And they said, they're like, we feel like more than one person's fallen down these stairs. And I was like, I believe it, because I've almost fallen down these stairs. Because if you take it at the wrong clip, you come around the corner. If you don't catch yourself, oops. So I'm sure that more than one person had a tumble down those stairs.
I just got the chills. Yes. Or they old, like some of those old stairs are so steep.
You know, they're not steep. They're actually beautiful and like a decent like tread and everything. But it's just like, if you're not paying attention, especially how like, because it goes up and there's a little landing and then it goes up again. If you come around that landing at a certain clip, you're just going to go straight down. And I know, because I almost did it several times because I wouldn't be paying attention. I was just like, ho-hum, here I come down the stairs. And I'd be like, oh my goodness, that could have been tragic. So okay. I can't imagine, you know, someone going down and with like laundry or what have you.
Oh,
you know.
Yeah, so
giant skirt.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow. Good reason to be haunted, I guess.
Yeah.
You mentioned before we got on here that your mother and your sister are even more sensitive than you and have a lot of stories. Like,
super sensitive. My mom, you'll see like full-on apparition ghosts. When we lived in one of our other houses in Jonesboro, I remember standing there at the kitchen sink, because before we had a dishwasher, she was washing dishes and I was drying them. And she was looking out at the backyard. And out of nowhere, she just goes, my grandmother walked across the backyard. And I was like, okay, I don't know what that means, but okay. And of course, you know, I never knew her grandmother. She'd been dead for a long time.
But that didn't disturb her or make her upset in any way.
No, it just was just so matter of fact the way she said it. She was like, oh, my grandmother walked across the backyard.
So growing up in the house with your mom and your sister was kind of an adventure.
Yeah.
And getting told about what was right in front of you.
Yeah. You know, something she didn't tell me till later, where she was like, oh, you know, that first house we lived in Jonesboro. She was like, I think there was a ghost there who didn't like other women. And so she's like, I felt like that house was really antagonistic until like you and your husband got married and your husband moved in too. And I was like, okay. You never told me these things, but okay. I never felt that way, but sorry you did.
Well, what's up with all these women hating ghosts in Jonesboro? So. It's like, come in there and like have some suffragette energy or something. Just
my sister, there's a 16-year age difference between us. So we didn't really grow up in the same house. Like, you know, I had to become an adult too before we really got close. But yeah, she has things happen to her all the time,
like seeing her grandmother walk across.
She does say that. She's like, yeah, she's like, every now and then, like my dad's mom, who we called Mamaw, she's like, yeah, every now and then Mamaw will come in and sit down in the house and see how I'm doing. This is the same grandma who lived in the Duncan house in the Chester Inn. Yeah.
Does she have conversations with your sister? Do they communicate or just say hi?
Yeah, she says they communicate. Yeah.
Wow.
Has your sister ever asked her what she thinks about you working at the old apartments?
I mean, I've never directly asked her, but I think she'd get a hoot. And I think it's part of it too, even though sometimes things would happen, I felt so comfortable at the Duncan house in Chester Inn, because I was like, oh, my family lived here. It's okay. But I've never really been anywhere that I felt like, oh, no, this is bad. I need to get out of here.
Well, if you have two ghosts attached to you that could be ancestors.
It could be.
Maybe they're just, yeah they're just always protecting you, which is good. Mamaw and what did you call your grandfather?
Papaw, yeah.
Mamaw and Papaw. Okay. Yeah, that's very Southern. Do you feel like it might be ancestors when you hear your name called?
I mean, maybe, but I don't know, because I've taken care of a lot of old places and handled a lot of old stuff. So who knows, really, in the end. I thought sometimes it was Robert Duncan, Mr. Duncan, who owned the Duncan house. And then Paul Fink, who was kind of like the town's first big historian. And like his picture hung in my office. So every now and then I was like, maybe it's the two of them. I don't know.
Had any of the investigators ever identified a name of one of the hauntings?
No. It was really just obvious in the first session when it was just me and them. After that, we did with the public. And as I learned, public people also bring their own ghosts. So sometimes they would be way more talkative than the ghosts who were actually in the Chester Inn.
Oh, I haven't heard that before.
Yeah, there were like a couple of people in the group who would follow around SRS, kind of like their, I guess, groupies, and they would come to every one of their investigations. And apparently one of the guys who was with them had a pretty negative ghost attached to him. So whenever that ghost tried to talk, they had to shut it down because they're like, no, we don't engage that ghost anymore.
Ooh. So in Jonesboro, there is a very old cemetery.
There is.
And I had one of my first encounters there. Yeah. I was doing a grave rubbing, and I remember that the tombstone was very pretty, and the woman's name was Eliza. That's all I remember. And it had like flowers and things, rosettes. It was a gorgeous tombstone.
You have some up there. They're absolutely stunning. Just stunning.
Yes. She did not want me to do that. Every time I taped, you know, with the wax paper and the masking tape, every time I taped it down, with no wind, it was a hot summer day, the paper would just fly off. At one point, I even tried to like hold it down with my arm while I rubbed it, and it was still like whipping around. And I was like, okay, all right, I get it, Eliza. I'll go somewhere else. It was just very clear she didn't want it.
I spent a lot of time in that cemetery. In 2014, I started an annual play that's now done in that cemetery every year.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
It's called A Spot on the Hill, and we share 10 to 12 stories from the cemetery every year of the people who are buried there. Weather permitting, we do the play in the cemetery. People love it.
What time of year do you do that?
We do it in October, right after the storytelling festival. We use the money to help take care of the markers. And I will just say, don't do rubbings anymore. They're really not good for the stone. Don't do it. But the good thing is that because we all have cell phones now, you can get really good pictures of the stones. But yeah, everybody used to do the rubbings, but now it's kind of like, no, please don't do that. But we all did that when we were younger.
Yeah. This was like, I mean, this was part of the camp. They took us there to do it.
My mom used to take her students, her English students, to do it in that cemetery. So, yeah.
Yeah, before we knew how delicate stone actually was, I guess.
Yeah, how delicate it actually was, yeah.
This is like 1991 or 92. Yeah. I do remember like a lot of the sunken in ground in front of the tombstones where the coffins had rotted, and very creepy.
And we really worked with the town too. The Heritage Alliance did to clean up the cemetery and the overgrowth and fill in those holes. So, and the Heritage Alliance now does tours throughout the summer, and we do the play. And then this past year, one of the things I'm really proud about before, you know, moving on, was that Gordon Edwards, we affectionately call him Graveyard Gordon because he is super committed to local cemeteries and preservation. He rediscovered the mass grave from the cholera epidemic of 1873.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. How did he discover it?
We knew that like 35 or so people died in 1873 in that summer from the epidemic when it came through town, and they died relatively quickly. I mean, you've got 35 people who die in a span of like 4 weeks. So there was talk pretty much as soon as it was over of, oh, there's a mass grave. But the paper, the Herald and Tribune didn't say anything about it. But a few other papers over time said, oh, it's back here on this part of the cemetery. And he'd been using ground penetrating radar for years to try and pinpoint it. And nothing had come up besides this is like, you know, a single grave. But just this last year, well, 2023, during the winter, he's like, let me clear this other part in the back, because it had gotten so overgrown, like the woods behind the cemetery over time had moved up the hill. So he beat some of that back even further, and they brought the radar back out, and it was like, oh yeah, no, this is multiple people in one spot.
35 people doesn't sound like a lot, but Jonesboro was not that big at the time.
It wasn't. It was like a population about 1,000, but everyone who could leave town left during those 4 weeks. So the population goes down to 100 who stay. So take 35 out of 100, that's a third. It would have been worse if people had not left, but most people just left because, you know, if you could get away from the source of contamination, you can outrun cholera.
So what was the source?
Drinking water. We think that it actually probably was on Spring Street because most of the deaths are on Spring Street. It comes to Nashville, Knoxville, and it gets to Greenville. And two gentlemen who are trying to outrun it in Greenville get on a train and get off the train in Jonesboro, and they already have cholera. They go and stay with a family on Spring Street, and the wife nurses them back to health, actually, and they get to go home to Greenville. But then she passes away, and then like the next day her husband dies. And then it just kind of spreads down Spring Street. So
they contaminated everything.
Yeah. They're patient zero.
Wow. It's so fascinating that you have records of all of that, though. And then you found the grave. So what was done once the grave was found? Were there markers that were
put up? We did. We put up a temporary marker just to signify the spot and the importance. And then we're going to put up, the Heritage Alliance is going to put up a more permanent marker that lists the name of the people we know who died. There's probably 15 to 20 people buried in that grave. So just listing them all, because probably a lot of them are there. We know where very few people who died are actually buried during that epidemic.
So have you had any spooky experiences in the cemetery? You've spent a lot of time there.
I do. You know, I love, honestly, the cemetery is my favorite place in the town because it's at the top of the hill and it's so quiet. And whenever we get to the point of the year where it's time to rehearse the play, I look forward to it because we get to share these stories. And it's just, the year has been so hectic and you just get to go up there and stand for a minute and just appreciate the peace that's up there. I love the cemetery. This last year, though, because we had rediscovered the cholera mass grave, we shared stories of some of the people who probably potentially are buried in that mass grave. We do the play. We have three different stations in the cemetery, and the cast moves, but the audience, you get assigned, hey, you're sitting here, and the audience stays, but the cast moves. And how it worked out was, like, the third station was pretty much, yeah, like within eyesight of the mass grave. And I shared the story of Eliza Floyd, who I think I know the Eliza you were talking about. Eliza Floyd, who she died, her husband died, and then three of their daughters died. All boom, 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 boom. And only two kids in the family lived. I shared her story. And I don't know, like, it was like not the last performance, but maybe the second to last. I just remember being back there in that third station and looking to the back of the cemetery and definitely feeling like there was someone back there watching. Like I could kind of see a little shadow or something. And it was dark. I mean, we do the evening performances at sunset. So by the time the show's over, it's dark. But I could feel like someone back there. And I wondered if it was maybe someone from the mass grave.
So were they standing about where the mass grave would have been?
Yeah, a little bit removed from that. But I definitely felt like there was someone back there watching.
Do you think they were pleased?
I hope so, because you know, I was happy, you know, because I was like, I was just glad to find it, because I hate when people get lost in history and time had kind of forgotten about it. And then literally nature had covered it up.
So what other areas of Jonesboro have you been involved with that you have some stories you'd like to share, or anything else that your sister's seen that you'd like to share?
Oh, okay. So she, speaking of like haunted objects, she at one point they lived in West Virginia. I can't remember exactly where, but it was a really, really small community. And she was teaching there, like they were hiring English teachers to come in and help out at the schools. And when they moved into the house, it was an older house. It was in a former coal mining town, but of course, coal mining was on its way out. So the town was struggling. And when she moved into the house, the realtor said, yeah, do with the house what you please, but that rocking chair has to stay. It cannot leave the house.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah, it was legit a haunted chair. Like the old man who had once lived in that house, still, that was his chair. And he still, like, he lived in that chair still, even though he was dead. And it was Welch, West Virginia is where it was. I didn't go up there, but my mom did before they moved back. Yeah, like the chair would move. And like, she was like, the cats would watch someone walk through the room who wasn't there.
Oh, of course.
And at one point when they were getting ready to move, and she was there for a couple of years, but like that place flooded like no one's business and all kinds of things. And she was like, yeah, we're not staying here anymore. So when they were getting ready to move, they were moving everything around the house. And of course they didn't take the chair out, but they did put the chair in a closet. And she kept having dreams about this old man yelling at her, get my chair, get my chair. So she woke up in the middle of the night one night and pulled the chair out of the closet and the dream stopped. Like he was mad that they put the chair in the closet.
Whoa.
Yeah. And when they left, that chair still remained. Like it was like the one rule with the house. Like the chair stays there forever. So
they had to pass on the advice when they sold their house.
Yeah. To the next people. Like the chair stays. Don't put it in the closet because he gets mad about that too. The chair stays here forever.
That is creepy.
It is. And I was like, I really do hope when I pass on, I don't get
so attached to something, I'm stuck with it for all eternity, just there.
You gotta haunt somebody's dreams. Exactly. About it's my chair. Don't put me in the closet.
Please don't put my chair in the closet. It's like, you know, I don't think I've ever been that attached to something that I'd want that to be my eternity.
How did the real estate agent know in the first place?
Oh, she probably had people complain. Or maybe the family told her, I don't know, and like she got it. I don't know, but it was a thing. They were told, yeah, don't move the chair.
Well, and your sister still moved in anyway, knowing there was a haunted chair.
I mean, she did. She would do that. I mean, I just don't think she knew exactly how haunted the chair was.
Just only halfway haunted. That is creepy. Is she back in Jonesboro now?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, she's back in Jonesboro now.
So she moved the only place more haunted than Jonesboro. So,
yeah.
She's seen Mamaw. She's seen the crotchety old man who needs his chair. Has she seen anything else that stands out to you?
My sister, she connects to like elemental stuff as well.
Oh,
wow. We do hear about that. Yes.
Yeah. We own the woods behind. So how our family is now is we call it the compound. We're not a secret militia or anything, but my parents live in the front house. It's three houses in a row and they all came together. First house is my parents. The middle house is me and my husband. My sister and her family live in the third house on the property. But there's woods behind us we own, and like she connects to the spirit in the woods. And she told me like the first public investigation we did at the Chester Inn, it was funny because it was at the end of the night because they go from like 6 to like 11 at night. And it was like almost 11 and one of the guys was doing the dowsing rod thing. And then he shut it down because he was like, that wasn't human and we don't deal with non-human entities. And what was interesting was she was like, I told the woodland spirit that it was going till 11. So she was like, that was probably it coming in to say, okay, time to go home. And I was like, that's kind of weird. Cause it was pretty much 11 when they were like, oh no, whatever entered the room isn't human and we don't deal with that.
It was the spirit of the woods.
Apparently. Nice. So
does your sister attend any of the paranormal investigations that you do?
No.
No, she just sends spirits to shut them down when it's getting too late.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair. That's fair. After the rocking chair experience, I probably wouldn't do that.
So, right?
Yeah.
She probably feels like she's haunted enough. So.
Yeah, that's good. I'm good.
So, communing with a woodland spirit, that sounds really nice.
I'm not even like sure how it works, but I don't know. She talks about it all the time. It's fascinating. I'm like, that's super interesting. She said she's reached to pick flowers before. And like a voice will go, don't pick me.
Whoa.
And so she does it. And then like, they'll be like, thank you.
I'm starting to get why you say hello and goodbye when you walk into buildings.
Whoa. What a great collection of experiences that you have. All the places that you've worked and lived and your family has lived.
I'm excited to get to know the spirits at my new place. The McKinney Center. It was actually the segregated school from 1940 to 1965. For the African American community, but now it's an art center, and people say it's haunted. We'll see if I get to know them.
Does anybody know who haunts it?
I don't know. I don't know if it's former students or faculty or who.
We'll have to definitely check that out.
If we were headed to Jonesboro, what are some can't miss places, haunted or otherwise, that you love?
Yeah, well, obviously the Chester Inn is beautiful. And what's great about Jonesboro is, you know, Main Street's a living timeline. So you've got buildings from the 1700s, but then also you've got buildings from the early 2000s side by side. So it's this beautiful timeline. And I'm sure if you're like really in tune, you can probably step into any building and find some spirit to communicate with.
It's the land sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, sometimes it is the land. Yeah, 100%.
Which is probably why your house is haunted.
Well, I mean, we do know like there was a house here a long time ago, like in the very back of the property is long gone, but like you can see remnants. So hey, there was a foundation here and there was a well here.
I wouldn't use it. Might have cholera.
Oh yeah, no, it's long shut off. Probably does.
Jonesboro is just an amazing, amazing city. And this has been so much fun connecting to you and hearing your stories and for me, it's very nostalgic. I can't wait to get back up there and see Jonesboro yet again. I just have such fond memories of it as a kid. It is so cool to talk to you because you've been in all of these buildings and having been the director, and then now you're going to be going over at the McKinney Center. I think if there's anything to be known about the town, you're going to know it.
I will say I learn something every day, but I feel like I have a pretty good core knowledge.
Anne, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Do you have any links that you want to share with the audience about our where you work at?
Yeah, so
where they can find tickets to your play, etc.
Heritageall.org was for the Heritage Alliance, and of course that'll get you the cemetery tours and stuff. But I'm hopeful to be moving the Spot on the Hill, the cemetery play, with me to the McKinney Center programming, because nice. I still get to do theater, history theater, on my new job. And of course their website is mckinneycenter.com.
Excellent. We will have links to that on our show notes at homespunhaints.com. Do you have any personal social media that you'd like to plug or any personal projects that you'd like to talk about?
I'm a published author and playwright, so I do have a not the best author website, AngieFellersMason.com.
Okay.
But I will say that every October I do like a fun spooky writing because I do enjoy a good short horror story.
Awesome.
So through Mountain Gap Books, me and some other local authors a few years ago published a collection called Haints and Hollers, New Appalachian Ghost Tales, and it's available on Amazon. We sell it here in Jonesboro, and it does very well, especially in October. So if you're looking for some new spooky short stories, that's a good anthology.
Awesome. Right. We'll link to that on our website, homespunhaints.com, where you'll be able to find this episode's show notes, links to everything that Anne talked about. Thank you very much for being our guest today.
Thanks again for having me.
It was awesome talking to you. It's always awesome. Everybody in our audience says, please get us more Tennessee stories. So happy that you're helping us kick off season 6 with exactly what everybody wanted. So thank you.
You're welcome.
And Haunted Loves, what do you think? Do you work in a haunted building or live in a haunted apartment? If so, even if you can't hear it, remember, the ghosts are probably gossiping about you and having a spooky day.
Homespun Haints is hosted by Becky Kielimnik and Diana Doty and produced by Homespun Haints Media LLC. Editing and music by Becky Kielimnik. Show notes by Diana Doty. If you have a ghost story and you'd like to be considered as a guest for this podcast, please visit our website at homespunhaints.com/submit.